I would like to, at this time, introduce our two co-presenters for these workshops. I have just known Joe for about a day and a half, and I feel like I've known him forever. And Hannah, I have known for probably close to, what, about 20 years?
25, 20, yeah.
Yeah. And there's actually someone on this call that I have known for 46 years. Anyway, I would like to, at this point, introduce our co-presenters, Hannah and Joe. And Hannah and Joe are going to tell you a little bit about themselves. They are active in the World Service Board of Trustees, either as former Board of Trustee members or current Board of Trustee members. So with that, who's introducing yourself first, Hannah or Joe? Okay, Hannah, go.
Okay. Hi, my name is Hannah. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm very grateful now to be one, but I certainly wasn't when I came. I came in the fall of 1977, abstained since January 6, 1978, and I was very grateful to leave about 90 pounds behind. And there's another person I know. It's amazing how many people you know. And anyway, Joe and I found out yesterday that, Neva had a problem. And that's one of my 99 reasons why I always say, please don't put any names on anything. We never know. So I hope you're not too disappointed that Neva can't make it because she had a family emergency. And Joe and I pitched in. As I said, we found out yesterday afternoon about it. And Joe and I will share the traditions going like one, two, three. And I will introduce Joe in a moment. He will go one, I will go two, and then three, four, et cetera. And we have some questions. And both of us are, whoever talks will answer first and then maybe ask if the other one, like in my case, Joe, if he would like to add something too, if that's okay with you. And I don't know if you ask want to ask, have us, have the attendees ask questions after we have a certain tradition, or if you'd like to wait until the end, that's up to you, Randy.
I would like to have you, I would like to do it one tradition at a time.
Oh,
So
okay.
we'll do discussion of tradition one, the
Okay.
three questions that we submitted for tradition one, and then I'll open it up. And
Okay.
again, for those of you who join late, everybody is on mute right now. If you do have a question, please raise your electronic hand and then we will call on you to unmute. So take it away.
Thank you very much. And I was asked to introduce myself, but Joe is the one who's going to go first. So Joe's going to introduce himself and start with tradition one. Go, Joe.
Thank you. My name's Joe and I am a compulsive overeater. I have been abstinence. I came into the program on May the 27th, 1983, and I've been abstinent since May the 28th, 1983. And I have done service at all levels. And I was on the Board of Trustees from 1990 to 1997, and I was the chairman of the board from 1994 to 97. So I service has been a very important part of my program. I would like to play one thing real quick, if I may. Let me see if I can share the screen. And I'm just going to play a short part of this. This is our founder, Roseanne.
Of overeaters, and that is why I keep coming back. What is your vision for OA in the future? Really, very hopeful. Right now, we're at a turning point, and there are groups of people in OA who insist on having things their own way, and they want everyone else to follow along. They have forgotten that the 12 steps and 12 traditions are the foundation of our program, especially tradition one, which says our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. And with that unity, if we abide by it, we can be the fellowship that I dreamed of so many years ago, a real haven of hope for compulsive overeaters everywhere.
Thank you. That was Roseanne from a tape from the year 2000 that I have, that we play it on occasions. Again, I'm going to share the screen real quick and get to it. One of the things that we wanted to talk about was the pyramid. And OA is an inverse pyramid. And at the top is all of the members. Down below is the various groups. Then it was a World Service, it's a world organization. And then it's a World Service Business Conference, determines what the bylaws and procedures and everything are. And at the bottom is the Board of Trustees. We are there to serve everyone else. And then below us is the WOS staff, who is a paid staff. They do make their money that way. They are usually not members of Overeaters Anonymous. Hannah, would you like to say something about the triangle, please?
Oh, okay. When I came, of course, I thought the trustees or the people who had positions were the most important people, because I looked up to them, and I didn't find out until later that we are there to serve the people. And I forgot to say my service, that I was also working for Intergroup, for Region. I have been convention chair, and then I was trustee, and up to about a year ago. And I found out that over the years that we are there to serve the people. And newcomers are very important. If they don't have anybody to ask questions, well, where would they go? And I think it's very important. And this is fairly new. It's been updated. The one I had was pretty old, but it's changed slightly. But the idea of who serves whom, that has remained the same. And it's very important that we have groups that work for our regular meetings, because they don't know if they have questions where to go. That's why we have intergroups. And if we still have questions, bylaws come up many times, and most of all traditions, you know, is it okay to do this or is it not? Because we always have to think about our program. And I know Roseanne would be very proud the way our program has grown. Her dream was to, you know, have it grow all over the world. And it has been and is in a lot of countries. And I think she would be delighted we didn't have this technology when she passed, that our program survived this difficult time. And we have Zoom meetings now, so we keep going and we can keep growing. And I think that's all I have to say. So please, Joe, tradition one.
Thank you very much. One second. Okay. Tradition one. Tradition one states, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. And this is a little thing that was put out by World Service, I believe, and its tradition one is unity. Isolated compulsive overeater and isolated group, no. Yes, OA group with other groups. And what's important in Overeaters Anonymous to me is that we stick together and we have a common purpose. You know, when I go to, I've been to meetings all over the world, and I've been to meetings in all over Europe, all in South America, in Australia, New Zealand. And the thing that works the best for me is when I go to a meeting, I'm going to hear the same thing that I hear at a meeting at my home group. And that we have that ability to be able to, as a group, have unity. Now, one of the questions that came up was, I've always thought that my recovery is of the most utmost importance. To me, tradition one indicates that our common welfare should come first. Does that mean that the welfare of others is more important than mine? No, it does not. But if we don't have group unity, if we don't have a group that follows the traditions, follows the concepts, follows the steps, then what happens is it soon becomes a group that is toxic. And so what it is the reason that we have the traditions, and the reason that we have these things, is to keep each group to their primary purpose, and to keep the group so that it is a group that anyone can go to and anyone can be a part of, and they will find the same level of recovery in all areas. I'm going to stop the share for a minute. I want to show you something else. This is from the World Service Group. It is tradition three, but I'm going to read the part below. It says, OA, the words meeting and group are often used interchangeably. So to start, here is the definition of a group. OA groups meet to practice the 12 steps, the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, guided by the 12 concepts of OA service. All who have a desire to stop eating compulsively are welcome in the group. All who have the no member is required to practice any actions in order to remain a member or to have a voice share at the meetings. Groups have no affiliation other than Overeaters Anonymous. It has affiliated as an overanonymous group by registering with the World Service. What this means to me, if I can get out of the share now. One second. Someone has entered the room. Okay. What this means to me is that the unity is that we, as a group, we do nothing that will be against the traditions, that nothing that will allow a member to not be welcome. And it is, if we have this unity, then I am able to come to that meeting and I am able to recover through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. So it's real important. The traditions came about because Bill Wilson saw that it was very possible that AA could go the way of the Oxford groups and the Washingtonians. They were early groups in the 1900s who were groups to stop people from drinking or to get sober. What happened was, unfortunately, was they started in this. All of the traditions in some way are very interconnected. What it was the Washingtonians and the Oxford groups started to get political. They started to form other groups, and it all became a big controversy. So what it is by being unified in one purpose and one purpose only, which is our, as it states in the preamble, our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and carry this message. Then what happens is we're able to have a group that is in recovery and a group that is able to, when the newcomer comes in, say, there is a solution and here is a solution. Yes, personal recovery depends upon unity, because if I'm in a group that is very toxic, does not practice the steps or whatever, I'm soon probably going to leave or I will never get the recovery that is promised. Anna, do you have anything to share? Okay.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, I know that it is so important, because most of us, at least I can speak for myself, I felt very uncomfortable when I came to the meeting. I did not want to be a compulsive overeater. And it was very important that the people were kind to me and told me to come back, because I never did anything twice in my life. If it wasn't working the first time, like when I went on a binge after 3 months, I would never go back again. And people told me how important it was not to give up, and that I can change my life. And I found out, and it took a long time, and it took the steps and the traditions to change my life. And I always say I only had to change one thing, and that's everything. And this program has given me so much. It's given me a life, and I could have missed it all if I had not stayed in program, because I'm still learning. Thank you, Joe.
And thank you. I think Go ahead.
The next tradition is, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience.
All right, Hannah, before we go on to tradition two, can we take a little side tour? Are there any questions
surrounding
tradition one? Because I do have one.
Okay.
You talk about unity, and unity does not necessarily mean majority rules. And I find a lot of times in group conscience meetings that there are people with differing opinions, people get sidetracked. And even though a person may say, oh, we're going to take a vote, and the vote goes one way, the majority rules, but yet there are people that are unhappy. How do you reconcile that with tradition one?
Joe, you're muted.
There is an old saying in AA that if you're unhappy with a meeting, grab a coffee pot and form your own meeting with another person. And that is the way that it is usually solved. What I think is important in the unity part of this is, and this is real important, and something that took me a long time to learn, was that when there is two opinions, that I listen to both opinions very carefully, because I may change my mind based upon what another person says. And so it's real important that, say, for instance, you know, people are going to say, you know, let's not have coffee at the meeting. And the other group says, let's have coffee at the meeting. And then they vote on it, and they vote not to have coffee. At least I can listen to the other person and say, think to myself, you know, which is best? What is the maker? What would the maker do? Which is a quote from Dr. Bob. And so, you know, it is about having that listening. And if you're unhappy with it, you know, you can either keep coming back to the meeting, or you can start to you can start a new meeting, which is the best way to do it. Does that answer your question, Randy? Okay. And also, too, is in the tape Roseanne has, she talks about that there was one meeting in the early days. I think there was six meetings, and they voted. There was a big discussion for a couple of hours on whether two men could join AA or not. And they voted to not let men join that meeting. And so, you know, that was later rescinded, but that was one of the things. And other meetings started and they allowed men to come in, but that particular meeting didn't allow men to come in. So, Hannah, do you have anything to say on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that if we're really stuck, and I'm very convinced it's black, and the half of it, it says it's black, half of it says it's white, we can always go to the next level, which is either the intergroup or maybe even the region or trustee, and ask them to come and do a workshop on traditions. And usually people do change their mind, because we have a lot of people who've been around for a long time and they know, or some of them, like, I think I know it all. I don't. But, you know, if you would feel that way, and some new people have ideas that they think are wonderful. So if we cannot come to an agreement, we can do what Joe said, get another coffee pot, start a meeting, which is what they used to say. Or we can invite someone else and get a third opinion, a neutral opinion. So those are the possibilities, in my opinion.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Hannah, step two.
Okay, my turn. Okay, I'll start again. For our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. And the spiritual principle is hope. There's hope for everyone. And I just want to go to the question that came to Randy. And it says, tradition two mentions a loving God. I believe in God. But what about those who come to OA and are either agnostics or atheists? Now, I can identify with that, and also the picture that Joe just put up, because I grew up completely without a religion. So, of course, at first I thought, God, it's a religion. And I found out that it is not a religion. It's just something believing that's bigger than myself, because I always thought that I was so self-sufficient that I could make the decisions and I would try to force everybody else to go along with it. And Joe touched on that too. And that's not possible. And I was very unhappy. And today I'm more open-minded. And this tradition, you know, tradition two, the trust in others that they may have a voice too, they may be right and I'm not always right. No, follow me, do my way. I have all the answers. That was me before program. And today, yes, I'm willing to serve. Tell me how I can help. And service is so important. I learned so much by just a sponsor saying, put out some literature. You can do that. Because when I first came to, I went from one extreme to the other. I knew it all. I was very smart when I came. And all of a sudden, I didn't know a thing and I didn't want to do anything. So I needed a lot of guidance. And so today I'm willing to serve. And tell me how I can help. And that is how I think this question is answered, except that, you know, there's a big difference in my opinion. Atheist, I believe those are people who do not believe in any particular religion. Agnostics. And the atheists are the ones that deny there's a God. And I don't really know where I fit in, but I was told by a sponsor, and I didn't know for 3 years that she was actually a very devout Catholic. She was so good that I never knew that. And that's what we do in programs. She tried to convince me, just try to believe that someone else, something else, knows more than you do, and that you're not the smartest person in the world. And sometimes just sit back, relax and wait, and the answer will come. And that has been so true. And so today I believe, and I do not have any problem at all with the word God anymore. And I know it, you know, the younger generation and also some people that sometimes are trying to change it. Maybe if the traditions were written today, they might say higher power and not God. I mean, this has been very old, the traditions. And then OA was allowed. We got permission to use the traditions and only change the word AA to OA, which is okay. But we cannot change anything else. So whatever I believe my higher power is okay. And it's just fine as long as I don't believe I am it. And I think I was that way and I've learned a lot. And that's how I answer the question. And I hope the person who asked the question, you know, what do you do if you're an atheist or agnostic? Be patient and just believe that I believe there's something bigger than myself and the answer will come eventually. Thank you. Joe, got to say something?
Thank you. This goes a little bit back to the third step where it talks about God as we understand him. And what it is that came about because the third alcoholic who Dr. Bob and Bill went to the hospital to sober up was an atheist. And he told Bill Wilson when he was writing the steps that he did not believe in God and he didn't think that it should be written that you have to have a belief in God. And that's why the tradition, the step is written as God as we understand him. And I think that that's real important. I have a lot of friends, both in OA and AA, that are true atheists. The other thing is, if you look at the how it works, there's a line in it that says, the chapter to the agnostic. And what it is what that said to me when I really started to look at it was that most people that come into AA or the 12-step programs are agnostics. And so what they have to do is find a spiritual condition. So is there any other questions on a tradition two? Tradition three. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. This has been one of the most important traditions for me. And what it is, it's about identity. And as you see on the thing I've put up, no is you don't belong, you aren't working the program right. Yes, you want to stop eating compulsively, welcome to OA. The only membership requirement is the desire to stop eating compulsively. I think someone asked about membership, and I think that that was just a convenient word that they used because it was members of Alcoholics Anonymous, so it's the membership. The third tradition came about because in 1937 or 38, is as Bill Wilson says in a tape that I heard, the reason the third tradition came about was because a sexual deviant wanted to join AA. It was, as I understand it, a black gay drag queen. I do not know if that part is true, but it was a sexual deviant, a gay man. And everybody was upset because it was not chic to be black, gay, or a drag queen in 1937. And so what happened was the first 100 alcoholics took a couple of months to discuss it and to talk about it. And what they said was that Dr. Bob, before they took a vote, said, what would the maker do? What would God do? And they voted that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and then now for us, stop eating compulsively. What this says is no matter who comes into the room, it's really important that we welcome them. I mean, I know people, I'm a gay man. I have sponsored straight people. I have sponsored gay people. I have sponsored women. I have sponsored men. And I have sponsored people who are politically totally 100% different from me. And the only thing that was important to me was that they wanted to stop eating compulsively. That's why we have to welcome everybody into these rooms. Now, one thing I want to say is that the traditions carry with them also a great responsibility. And that responsibility is, you know, it later on, they say you can't throw anyone out of OA. Well, what you can do is, if they are acting in such a manner, which is continually disrupting the meeting, which, for instance, we had a person here in Houston that was coming to meetings and openly trying to pick up women. The men had a talk with him. He wouldn't stop. He was very abusive to women. And we finally took a vote and we asked him not to come to meetings as long as he was doing that. So it does carry a responsibility with it. But if a person is only wanting recovery from eating compulsively or one of the eating disorders, they have a right to be welcome to the meeting. And that's the only important thing. It doesn't matter about race. It doesn't matter about gender. It doesn't matter about nationality. It doesn't matter about anything. The only important thing is that they want to stop eating compulsively. Hannah?
Well, that is really true. And I didn't know that either, Joe and everybody else, because I came because I still thought it was a diet, and it's not. And it's very difficult to get that message across to people that, you know, pick a food plan and try to do the best you can. But then if you don't do it perfectly, and that was a clincher in my life, everything I wanted to do had to be perfect. And there's no such thing. So I had to come up with something comfortable, and comfortable food plan meant working with a sponsor, running it by someone, as many people as I thought there were. But on the other hand, you know, they could not dictate to me what I had to do. And I want to talk about something later, which is an outside issue. Or maybe I can just throw it in right now. When I came, and I came in Pasadena, California, Southern California, and somebody all of a sudden had the smart idea to write a cookbook based on the gray sheet, which all of you know about. And I thought, well, maybe that's not such a bad idea, but I was smart enough not to buy it right out. And I went home and told my husband, who had many more years in his program, and he said, that is against the traditions. So it's important that I stick with the traditions. And it's very clear. We have a page from World Service that has been approved. It's approved literature. And if it's not on there, it's an outside issue. And it's up to me, someone who's been around for a while, to explain that to people. Because most of us, when we're very new, either we're so shy, we don't say anything, or we get over-enthusiastic and we want to better the program. And there's no such thing. So the only requirement should be a desire to stop eating compulsively and have the faith that that's going to get us to the next level. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have a question from Ellen.
Thank you. I'm Ellen. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I have a question as it relates to Zoom and our new modern technology. And I teach, some of you have taken my classes. I teach Zoom hosting classes. Started out being just San Diego hosts, and now it's everybody and anybody can come take my classes. And one of the things that I've noticed is happening, and because of the security issue and the Zoom bombers and disruptors and all that, is that some groups have added requirements to come into their meetings. Like you have to have your camera on, you have to have your real name, you know, things like that. You have to introduce yourself. And I do make a point in my classes to explain that the tradition is, no, you don't, not everybody has a camera. Of course, it's already a self-selecting group that people can't attend a meeting unless they have a computer and internet, but not everybody is comfortable. Maybe, you know, it's like sitting in the back of the room, showing their face, or don't know how to change their name and all those kind of technical difficulties. And that the only requirement is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Just wonder what your comments are about in this, you know, and I teach them all the ways to keep yourself safe, but still let people in because they could be newcomers, and how to watch out and get rid of the people who aren't. Comments about how this relates in this new Zoom age.
Well, may I just say something? We had a case, and I know Joe in his meeting too had a case that was a terrible Zoom bombing that happened. And it's terrible. It's really scary, especially for new people, because if I had seen things like that when I was 20, I would have freaked out. Today, I just say, you know, what the heck, and go on my way. But we had someone who tried to come in when Brandy tried to let people in. And it was just a bunch of numbers, about 20 of them. And she kept saying, please identify yourself. And that person did not. So I know that it's a fine line. We want to let everybody in, but we also want to protect our people. So I think the corresponding with people who are in the waiting room, because I might never have been to your meeting, and I haven't, this is the first time. And if I would come in and I would be XYZ, whatever, and somebody would ask me and I wouldn't answer, I could also ask that person, now, has somebody asked you or told you about the meeting? And if I say, yeah, Ellen told me, then I know there's a connection, because some people, as you said, Ellen, are not comfortable, you know, giving their own name. But I think there's some security things that we can be cautious, but still things happen. And we're just doing the best we can. And as Joe mentioned earlier, that happens in face-to-face meetings too. And we had a case when I was on the Region 2 board, and, you know, where some guys were, a guy was harassing girls. And so I finally told them, I said, you know, you can't kick him out right now because he hasn't done anything, but go and escort that young lady to her car. And if tell him that he shouldn't be doing that. And then if it goes on too long, I said, tell him he can't come back. And if he does anyway, just lock the door. I mean, we do the best we can because we're all human. Joe?
Yeah, I agree with you. At our meeting on Sunday night, it's a speaker meeting, long-timers meeting. And we do not allow people after the speaker starts to unmute themselves and or to turn on their video, because we did have a video turn on that was up strictly porno film. And so what it is, we're trying to protect ourselves. And again, I can understand not having the camera on, but I really do believe that they need some kind of identification in order to do it. And it's real important that we are very protective of the people that are in the meeting. And this is very true, whether it is, in-person meeting or a Zoom meeting or whatever. I mean, the AA club where I go at times, we have actually called the police and had somebody arrested because of their actions that were inappropriate. And so it is very difficult. But what the important thing is that, and all the traditions are about, is making it safe for the person that walks into the rooms. That is really what it's about, especially the newcomer. Now, I've been around long enough that I can handle a lot of situations that most people can't handle. But, you know, there's, if you have somebody that has a month and they're suddenly struck with a person, you know, we had one person at an AA meeting bring a box of Bibles in, which is an outside, nothing wrong with Bibles, but they're an outside issue. And so, you know, we asked him to take the Bibles and to leave, and he could come back after he took them out. So it's a very fine line between everything. And the other thing is, at any meeting, you can probably find somebody who thinks some tradition has been broken. So that's what you have to understand also. And it's best to talk with that person rather than just condemning them or yelling at them or whatever. Find out their point and then explain it. Randy?
Thank you. You partially answered the question for me. And that is that, first of all, to make the comment that it's incumbent on us as members to be the stewardship of that meeting. And I hold the meeting precious in my hands. But the question is, if there is someone who unwittingly or wittingly does something that is not consistent with the traditions, what is the best way to handle that? The reason I ask this question is that there was a situation in a meeting I attend where there was a pretty flagrant violation. And another member of the fellowship just kind of popped up and started ranting that, oh, this is not in accordance with the traditions, blah, blah, blah. And a bit of a fracas ensued. What is the best way to handle it when you are faced with something like that?
For me, what I do normally is, if I'm leading the meeting or if I'm there, I'm saying, could we talk about this later? Or would you, this is a violation of our traditions. Can I talk to you about it after the meeting? Because a lot of the tradition violations come about not because the person's wanting to hurt OA, but because they do not understand or they do not have the knowledge that's available to them to in that situation. For instance, if I wrote a book on recovery and I brought it into a meeting, there was a guy who wrote a book very, very early on in California. And unfortunately, he named it Overeaters Anonymous because we did not copyright the deal. And he would sell the book at conventions. And eventually they had to stop him from doing that because it wasn't approved out in approved literature. And so, you know, it's a matter, a lot of times it's about education. It's about educating people to what can be done or can't be done according to the traditions. Does that answer it? Mm-hmm. Nancy, B?
And may I just add that it does still happen. And I've had the answer when somebody puts something out at a convention. And when the person was questioned, they said, well, it's free. And Joe said that about the Bible that somebody brought in. And it doesn't matter. And they mean well. But so that person insisted, no, they weren't going to take it down. So somebody else and I, we went and we collected all that stuff and we put it in a box and shoved it on a table. But you can't always do that. I mean, it's very, very difficult. And I've also had it happen where I mentioned to someone who was working with me on the board, I said, you know, when somebody shared that, it's against the tradition. I whispered and I was told, no, it's not. And I tried to talk to the person afterwards and I could not convince that person that it was against the traditions. So sometimes people are stuck in their way of thinking and it's very difficult to convince them otherwise. That's why we always have to have a group conscience. We have to talk about our feelings, how we feel, and then somebody else can come up with something that is exactly the opposite and then get a third person and find out what it really is all about. Because, you know, as a human being, I may understand the traditions entirely different than Joe does. I don't think so, but it's possible. So we have to talk about things like that. And we also have to be sure that nothing like that happens. We have to bring it out in the open. Otherwise, where's the limit? Where's the limit? Thank you. Okay, next. Any more questions?
Nancy.
Nancy, where are you? You're muted.
Imagine me being muted, Joe. Pretty funny. My name is Nancy Beecham, and I'm a possible reader. You know, I've been sitting in meetings abstaining for 46 years, and I've seen a lot of things, but in my belief, in my opinion right now, we are just top heavy with newcomers. We are just pouring in by the dozens, many of them from other 12-step programs. And we don't really have a lot of long-timers and old-timers sitting in our meetings. So, and I get asked to speak a lot. And one of the formats I got recently is a format from some meeting in the East Coast. And this format talks about how they're linking non-gender, binary things, and that you can change the words using higher power or power and all these things that you can do to make the meeting comfortable for you. It's just changing the words, as was spoke about a lot in these first traditions. So I'm wondering, and then also I know that for me, I certainly will not speak at this meeting because they have so many tradition violations right in the format. But and I'm wondering about, there's so much of that going on. And also, I wondered if you might talk a little bit as you go through these traditions. I know for me, the traditions have given me the filters to live a cleaner life. They've given me the filters to learn relationships and to learn how to behave at work and how to let go of things with my children. You know, and the honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love, you know, those four concepts are so much in the tradition. So I know it's things like to ask, is what I'm hearing true or is it false, or is it right or is it wrong, and are things, how will they affect the other fellow, you know? So I wonder if you might relate a little more to how you do the each tradition in circumstances in your own life, if possible, too. But I'm wondering, when things are very flagrant, you know, and like I went to a meeting the other night where, although it's geared for people in other programs to get abstinent, I didn't hear them talking about abstinence. I heard them talking about other outside issues and those problems. So I'm just wondering what we do.
Tell them to go to a traditions workshop.
They're not exactly interested.
And anything that's an outside issue, if people bring things in, and I always refer to the list that OA has published, it's on the website, what's OA approved and what is not. And, you know, if I hold that in front of somebody's face, I mean, I still have no control over it, but I can tell them this is what it is. This is what I live by. And if they keep doing it, I just don't go to that meeting anymore. And I might even say to, you know, the trustee, send the trustee a note and say, you know, these are all the violations. Could you look into it? And maybe it has to go further to the Board of Trustees. We can't dictate anything to anyone because we can't control people. I was uncontrollable when I came. Joe?
Yeah, when I was on the Board of Trustees and was chairman, there was a group of meetings in Southern California at HAL Group who would not let people speak for 30 days. You had to follow their food plan. At that time, you could not have food plan. You could not dictate a food plan. They had it on the tables. And we sent 3 or 4 letters to them. And I went to one of their intergroup meetings. By the way, I was treated worse than I've ever been treated in my life at that intergroup meeting as chair. And, you know, I asked him simply, you know, just let anybody speak because that's what's in the bylaws, and to not put the meeting, the gray sheet thing on the meeting list on the table, but simply give it from sponsor to sponsee. And you go that way, you can be within the traditions. And they said basically, hell no. And so what we did as a board is that, which was very difficult. And after a lot of discussion was I signed a letter to them that we were delisting their 350 or 450 meetings from Overeaters Anonymous, and they could no longer be on the list. And so they formed their own group. They did what they want to do and everything else. But again, it's back to, you know, now the thing is, if some group is flagrantly doing it, the best thing to do is to write the trustee in that area and to have them write a very nice letter to them explaining why or why not, and then saying, if you want to be a registered meeting, you need to follow these guidelines. And then if they don't do it, then you're going to say, we're going to have to take you off the list. And there's nothing wrong with that in our bylaws or principles or policies. Barbara? Do you have a question, Barbara? Someone will have to... Yeah.
Okay. My question is, when we've had some people who come in and ask questions in the beginning or through the meeting, and I'm asking, what's the best way to handle that? And what's the difference between handling it with a newcomer or an older OA member? That's a question.
Do you want me to go or you want to go?
Anna.
Okay, well, I think the best way with a newcomer is first I would ask them, do you have a sponsor? And have them talk it over with their sponsor. If it's someone who's been around for a long time, I would suggest to maybe ask that question of the trustee or maybe go to an intergroup meeting and present their case. And it's amazing how many people would talk in a different way. And it might convince them. And the worst thing that can happen, the worst scenario is that they say, I don't like your meetings anymore and I'm going to leave. And, you know, there are some people we cannot save. We're doing the best we can, but we have to follow a path of traditions. And if we don't, we're going to fall apart. Like Joe was talking about the AA people, Oxford Group and Washingtonians. You know, not everybody can be saved. And I always thought I could save everyone. It's not possible. Joe?
Yeah. What I usually do is if someone is constantly asking questions, what I will do to them is say, you know, we have a tradition, which we do in most meetings, that you only share once. And I would ask that you get with me after the meeting and I will be happy to answer your questions. And again, it's a matter of being very kind and gentle and loving and saying to them, what you're doing, we need to change it a little bit and I will be happy to help you after the meeting is going on. So does that answer it, Barbara? Okay.
Okay. Next.
Tradition 4.
Okay. And that's mine. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other OA groups as a whole, and the principle there is courage. And I think we were talking about that. It takes courage to talk to someone, even if you feel they're not doing the right thing. And I just want to use as an example, you know, that if I feel something is not quite right, I can report it to the intergroup. They can send their delegate to World Service, and it gets up to the board sometimes as a motion. And there's one group, and California is very independent. And so they always want to say change the steps and traditions. They want to take the word God out of it. And now the latest thing is, you know, gender neutral and stuff. But every time it goes to World Service, it gets defeated. And that is the right way. But, you know, they get so upset over things like that. And we cannot change anything, because where would it stop? Where would it stop? We change one thing, we change another. I think there's a reason. And that was really a nudge from a higher power, from a God, as I understand it today, to write the traditions, because they only wrote them because they were afraid that something else would happen. And we needed them. And Roseanne had her doubts about steps and traditions too. She wanted to make a few changes and decided it wasn't a good idea. Go with what it says, and maybe there's something to it. Maybe it's right. Thank you. And let's see, there was a question here. And it says, there are some groups out there that have a very strict meal plan and seem to run things differently. Tradition 4 indicates that, yes, a group is to be autonomous, but don't these outliers affect OA as a whole? Well, they do. And as Joe was referring to earlier, there are some groups, and I call them splinter groups, and they have food plans that are not like we used to have a dignity of choice. Now it's plan of eating. And They wanted to stay part of OA, and so they finally decided, and that was the HOW groups that Joe talked about, and some of them chose they wanted to be part of OA, so they don't display that literature anymore. But I found out that if somebody asked someone to sponsor them, they kind of hand the food plan under the counter, so to speak, and that is something I have no control over, and if that works for them, as long as they keep coming back and adhere to all the other traditions. But each group is autonomous, meaning that we can have our meeting format the way we want it, as long as it's a meeting format that does not conflict with the traditions. And otherwise, we cannot do anything that affects OA as a whole and change it, like they wanted to change the traditions at steps and change higher power, God to a higher power, or I don't know, something else even. And that's how I understand that. Joe?
Yeah. I could talk for about 3 hours on this. there have been a lot of, there was HOW, there was the Cambridge groups, there was the different groups. When I was on the Board of Trustees, that things came up. I mean, we had groups that one group wanted to measure, weigh you before you every meeting, which we asked them not to, because that affected OA as a whole. You know, there were some groups that were perfectly okay to do what they did. There was one group in California that was a clothing optional meeting. It was on identity. And I never went to it, but I understand it was a very good meeting. And so Nancy probably went to it. And anyway, you know, what it was is that it's important. What it boils down to is, as I showed you that thing, is an OA group is one that follows the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and the 12 concepts of service, which most people have never heard of. And it has no requirements for you to be able to speak. One of the things that Southern California HOW did, was that you couldn't speak for 30 days until you were 30 days abstinent. This is totally against our bylaws of what a group is. The other one at the time was that you couldn't put a food plan out on the table. And so those were the only requirements. Today, the only requirements, as I showed you, were that you follow the 12 concepts, traditions, and steps, and that you don't have a requirement to speak, and that everybody can come to the meeting. And if any of those are broken, then it is a violation of the traditions, and it needs to be brought up to the Board of Trustees. That is the best way to handle it, or to your region or to your inner group. It's very important, again, that everyone that comes to a meeting feels safe. Now, there are special focus meetings. And the special focus meetings are, there are men's meetings and there are women's meetings. There are LGBTQ meetings. There are, the newest one is bariatric surgery meetings. But most of those meetings, with the exception of the women and the men, which they really do ask people not to come to if you're not of that gender, is that if you come, I can go to a bariatric or an anorexic meeting and they welcome me with no problem. So what it is it's very important that you allow people to come to every meeting. Yes, Chris. Someone will have to.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. I'm Chris, and we're in the middle of creating a newcomer meeting. And, you know, it's taken a while. Everybody has input. We try and put it together. But literally, if we included everything, including what OA is recommending in the newcomer meeting, there's no time to share. And all of the literature is great. So I don't know if there's a format other than the OA website that says this is the way it should be, because these are members that are in other groups that say, oh, I just loved having this, and this would be perfect for the newcomer. And we're kind of in the middle of that and having a little sort of a tug. And I just wondered if there's, I mean, other than making maybe the meeting an hour and a half, but I know when I was a newcomer, I didn't listen to a lot of that stuff. I do now, but I'm just wondering, is it better to be leaner than meatier in the literature, the format?
The formats, if I'm not mistaken, the formats put out by World Service are suggested formats. Uh-huh. And so it is up to each individual group, as long as it doesn't affect other groups. Now, for instance, we have meetings where, especially on Zoom, they read how it works, the Serenity Prayer, how it works, preamble, and then they go right into a discussion or a speaker or whatever. And they often do the tradition of the month. They don't read the whole traditions. I have been to meetings recently, probably in California and New York more than anything else, where you have 30 minutes of readings before you actually get to the meeting. And it's great. But, you know, I really think that hearing experience, strength, and hope, and how a person worked the steps, and then discussion on it, is the most important thing we can do. And so I don't always agree with the suggested formats personally. And if I run the meeting on Sunday night that I lead, a long-timers meeting, we read the how it works, and basically that's it. Nancy?
Thank you.
Someone needs to unmute.
We can't hear you, Nancy.
I just put in the chat that about two wonderful, fantastic half-hour newcomer meetings that are always packed, the old school one after our meeting on Tuesday night. And I can get you, I put my email there, and we'll get you in contact with the people, with Zan and Jack and the people, the old timers that founded that meeting, and get you those formats. And the other one is Serenity Sunday, for more time than I can imagine, has been having a wonderfully successful newcomer meeting before the meeting on Sunday mornings. So you probably would want to attend those, but they really have it down pat.
Okay. So can I ask then, so this is in tangent with an OA meeting rather than being a separate newcomer meeting standing alone?
Well, they make it available so you can actually experience a regular meeting too, if you want to, but many people come after the meeting just for the, because it's listed in the OA place separately as a separate newcomer meeting.
Chris, I would highly suggest, if it were me, and I don't know, everything I say is not OA approved by the World Service, but if you have a newcomer meeting, I think what's important to me is when I came was they read the preamble and they read how it works. And then they got into the meat of the meeting. And that was what was important. What I identified with was I identified with the shares that were coming up, mm-hmm. not with, I didn't even understand how it works. I could care mm-hmm. less about how it works. I just wanted to really, you know, I went to that meeting to get thin, find a partner, and live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I say husband, find a husband, get married, and live happily ever after. And I wasn't caring about the other stuff. I wanted to know how people got into recovery and what they got out of recovery. Mm-hmm. Ellen?
Oh. I'm Ellen. I'm still Ellen, still compulsive reader. And I don't really know how to put the question, but I am in meetings a lot where the traditions are being broken. Non-OA literature being read, you know, the wrong prayers that are not approved prayers, and the rules with speak, who can speak, and all. And these might be strong, terrific meetings with this one big thing, like they have a rule about who can speak, or it might be meetings, you know, special focus meetings that have lost a lot of traditions. And I'm not the kind of person who likes conflict. It is not, I don't like getting into politics. I like staying on the tech side of things. So I tend to not want to make trouble. Short of tattletaling and going to my trustee, you know, and I'm on the Instagram board. So it means I go to, you know, the region or I have to go up higher. I don't like doing that. I wish there were a way of like anonymously helping people get into, you know, like maybe Hannah, you come visit. No, they'll know I sent you, you know, I don't know how to do this. I don't know where to go with this. And some of them are teeny little things. Some of them are big things. You know, Nancy, we were in one the other day and my reaction, I left after 5 minutes and we made myself a cup of coffee and went to a different meeting. That's my avoidance reaction. I didn't want to be there for that. Thank you.
Well, the best way, there is a tool you can use to do that, is get their phone number and call them. Call them one-to-one and explain to them what you felt when they were sharing and how you felt that it was violating the traditions, and talk to them about it. That is something that, you know, I think it's the most important thing we can do is learn how to communicate with another person. You know, I actually think that the whole reason for the 12 steps in a way is to, for us to be able to have meaningful relationships, intimate relationships. And the more we can communicate, I can communicate one-on-one with a person, the more that intimate, it becomes more intimate. And also it becomes me learning from them and then learning from me based upon experience, strength, and hope.
Okay. I just like to add something that when I came, of course, that was a long time ago, and we only met in person, and we always had a newcomer meeting. And what they did, they shared, and they had a very short format, and then they shared someone who had the experience, strength, and hope. And for me, I got a lot more out of someone telling me all the things they did and their feelings, how uncomfortable they felt. And with these things that they were doing, their life got better. And I think those are the things that are important for new people, instead of lecturing, saying, you know, this is what we do, that's what we do, that's what we should do. I think the personal relationship, and that might have been a little easier when we met face to face, because we could take also after meeting people aside and say, you know, I heard you say something like that. Do you think that maybe that was not quite right? Or maybe you should talk to your sponsor if you have one, or maybe recommend someone or something. And that's how I learned that I wasn't always right. But when somebody lectured to me, immediately the antenna went up and I resisted, because I was one of those people. I never wanted to be told. So anyway, thank you. Joe, I guess your turn.
Number five, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive eater who's overeater who still suffers. And there was a question. Tradition five indicates that our group purpose is to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. I brought some literature for my new doctor, and when she walked in, I felt so uncomfortable. She had signs of being a compulsive overeater. How do we reach out to people without embarrassment? This may be a break of traditions, but I'm in three different programs. I'm in AA, I'm in SLAA, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and I'm in OA. I'm more comfortable speaking about my sex and drug problem and alcohol problem than I am about my food problem, because I had so much embarrassment and so much shame around the food. What it is, and it goes down to one of the other traditions, this is a program of promotion, of attraction, not promotion. And it's real important that I'm willing when somebody asks me, for instance, I lost a lot of my weight the first 9 months I was in the program. I went down to being anorexic, actually. I lost about 120 pounds in 9 months. And people would say, how did you do it? And, you know, I would say, well, I gave up sugar and I gave up flour. I don't eat between meals. Wow, I don't know if I could do that. And what I would say to them is, sometime if you'd like to have coffee, I will tell you how I did it. And that's the way that we do it. The tape that Roseanne, I have of Roseanne, actually, this is a 3-hour meeting, I think it is what it was in the thing. If you would like to see the tape, if we have time at the end, I'll be happy to play it. She talks about when she was starting, she went to her daughter's pre-K and she said to the people there, oh, I'm starting a program for fat people. Do you want to come? And nobody said anything. But when she went to a neighbor and she said to the neighbor, I'm going to the YMCA and I want to start an organization. They said, what is it? Oh, I don't think you'd be interested. She said to the neighbor, Joe, oh, I just don't think. Well, what is it? Well, I just don't think you'd be interested. And she said to Joe, finally, she said, well, I'm going to start a meeting called Overeaters Anonymous because I'm compulsively overeating. And Joe says, I might be interested. And that is the way that I do it today. If I was at an art event the other day, I'm an artist, and there was a guard, and we somehow got on being thin, not being thin. And she obviously had a problem with Overeaters Anonymous. And we were talking, and I said, you know, I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And she's, oh, I just don't think you can do that. And I said, well, you know, what really helped me is you can find information about it at oa.org. Now, I don't know if she ever went to it or not, but what I did was I put the germ there and see if it would grow. And that is what I think it is about. Our primary purpose is to carry the message of recovery. And so what I can do is today I am more willing to talk about my food problems. In the early days of, I'm an artist, I traveled all over the country working, and my clients would bring in food. In the early days, I would say, well, I need to have a salad. I don't eat flour or sugar. And they would say, oh, okay. And then later they would say, what's going on? And I would say, well, I'm allergic to sugar and flour. I was a little embarrassed by it. I'm allergic to food and I'm allergic to sugar and flour. It makes me break out. What I didn't want to say was it makes me break out to my top weight of 350 pounds. So what it is that later on, if they asked me about it or whatever, then I would explain what it has. But I try to carry the message by being abstinent, by going to meetings, by being willing to talk about myself, and to not be embarrassed about my food addiction. That is what's real more important. Today, I can talk about anything that's in my life that is causing me problems or whatever. You know, for one thing, there's tapes someplace about me telling about everything. But anyway, which I wish weren't around. But anyway, so what it is we have to keep it pure and simple. The only thing that I want to hear about in Overeaters Anonymous is I want to hear about recovery from a seemingly hopeless disease. And that is what's real, real important. And, you know, I'm going to read from the long form of the AA traditions, which is in the big book. So there's not a traditions violation. With respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority other than its own conscience. When its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted. I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong one. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take action that might majorly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board. On such issues, our common welfare is paramount. Five, it's the same as a short form. But anyway, it's about when a person walks into the meeting, whether they're a newcomer or whether they're an old timer, is what they hear is about recovery in Overeaters Anonymous. Anna?
Okay, yes. I just want to say that when I was new, I lost my weight and the compliments kept coming. I wanted to save the whole world. And it doesn't work that way. You get hit over the head a lot because people don't always want to know, especially if they have a weight problem. And I learned not to do that anymore. But now at this point, and I've been the same, this in my area, nobody's ever seen me 90 pounds heavier than I am now. But little things, whenever I have an opening, I like to tell people about it. Like I went to my dentist and I was sitting on the chair and I was freezing. I was shivering. And she said, do you want a blanket? And I said, yes, please. Yes, please. And I said, and she said to me, well, you're cold because you're so thin. And that gave me an in. And I said, well, I haven't always been this way. I used to weigh about 200 pounds. How did you do it? And then I can talk about it. And I've had things like that happen on an airplane flying to Albuquerque as trustee, or, you know, with a stewardess and also with other people. And I noticed today, I didn't know because when I was new, of course not. I know today that if I start talking about something like that, I can see the wall go up. That means I don't want to know anything about it because a lot of people are that way. But if they seem open, then I tell them more about it. Like in my case, my dentist, she was open. And so I actually took her one of the Where Do I Start pamphlets. I haven't seen her at a meeting. But as Joe said, the seed was planted and I can do that. And I was also very worried that someone might find out when I was new that I was a compulsive overeater. I didn't want to be one. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought was kind of fashionable already, and my husband was in it. But Overeaters Anonymous, so I try to hide that and not ever say that word. And also when people ask me, you know, and my husband said to me, well, why don't you tell them that you can't eat sugar or this or that because you're borderline diabetic. Your grandmother died of diabetes, right? And everybody in my family was fat. And then I felt comfortable doing that. And you know what I say today? If somebody says, oh, well, you know, you can eat that. Why don't you eat that? I say, well, you know, I break out in fat and everybody laughs. But not everybody feels that way. I feel comfortable with myself, by myself today and with other people that it's okay. And then they're shocked and I can tell them that I went all my life, you know, being either obese or losing weight up and down, grateful I wasn't addicted to pills, and that today this is my life, but only if they want to hear it. I don't push people anymore. So there's a fine line between finding an opening and trying to hit people over the head, because I would like to save the whole world, but the whole world does not want to be saved. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Tradition six.
All right. And the tradition six says, an OA group never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And the willingness to do this. And there was a question on that too. And it said, there wasn't a question on that. Anyway, so I tell you how I feel about it. It's so important that we do not get involved. And there's some people, and I have a little problem with people they call gurus, you know, and people, you know, who have a name and they're popular and they have spoken, you've seen them up on stages and they're members. But what would happen if this person all of a sudden does not work the meeting anymore? Anybody who sees us said that thing is not going to work. And the other thing, and that's what happened with this particular workshop, you know, Neva, who I worked with, she's a great person, but apparently she had a problem in a family or with herself. I don't know, and I wish her well. But you see, we put names on the flyers at times. And that is something I have a little bit of a problem with, because if I want to know about traditions, I go to a tradition workshop, and not because, okay, Joe is speaking there, or maybe Hannah is participating, then something like this might happen. But the reason for it not being on there, in my opinion, is that I want to go there to learn about the traditions. And sometimes I learn more than other times. And the same with the speaker. I go there because I want to hear a speaker. I want to hear the story, and not because Joe Blow is speaking because, you know, he is so famous all over the world. And those are the things that I had to learn, because we do not have any gurus, and each group, you know, should never do anything that is against the traditions. We should not elevate anyone. A new person is just as important, sometimes I think more important than I, because I learned a lot of things. But when I was new, I was so smart, I thought I didn't have to learn. And I have to learn a whole lot and change my life. It makes it easier. But I always have to remember that, you know, I cannot dictate anyone, but I also have to be careful that I do not promote anyone and say that that person knows more than anybody else. Joe?
I can't add much to that. I know that when we bought the building, we own our headquarters in Rio Rancho. It was about a 3-year deal to get approval of the World Service to buy it. And people said, oh, it's a violation of traditions because of problems of money, property, and prestige, divert us from our primary purpose. But we moved from Southern California, where the rent was outrageous. And we were looking for a place where it would be cheaper to do the World Service. Al-Anon at that time had bought their building. And we talked about it, and we decided that OA had property. They had typewriters. They had word processors. They had books in the storage. And so we did finally get our own building. And one of the best things I think we did from a financial standpoint. And so, you know, what it is a lot of times when you're discussing things, it's important to have long discussions and talk about it and get a lot of opinions. And then when we took the vote to buy the building, it was overwhelmingly to buy it. And at the World Service Business Conference. So, okay, I think we're on 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. One time I used to fly all over the country. I was gone 3 weeks or 4 weeks out of the month, and I went to a lot of different meetings all over the world when I first came in. And I was in Washington, D.C., and they had a major storm. And I couldn't get my flight out. So I went to Georgetown, and I happened to go to an AA meeting. And, it was a traditions meeting. You know, I joked at the old timers meeting recently that the quickest way to empty the room is say, we're going to have a traditions meeting. And and so I was stuck there. So I listened, and I heard something that was really to change my ideas about the traditions. And the guy basically said, it is harder to live the traditions in my life than it is to live the steps. And it really struck me. And one of the things was that I was self-supporting through my own contributions, that I was not constantly looking to someone else in order to pay my rent, to buy buildings, whatever, that I needed to work for it. I think it's also important in Overeaters Anonymous that we are self-supporting through our own contributions. And again, this is where the steps sort of are intermingled, is that we don't accept outside donations from other people. I know that we have had, groups that have grocery store one at a time wanted to contribute $1,000 to us, and we turned it down. We had a convention, and Dear Abby was there. And she, we were talking about we needed money, and we passed the basket. And she was very instrumental in us in OA Readers Anonymous growing. And she put a check for $1,000 in there. And we talked about it at the trustee meeting. And one of the trustees took it to her and said, we cannot accept this because it's against our traditions. And so, you know, it would have been nice to have the $1,000. But we had to be self-supporting through our own contributions. And again, it goes back to the Washingtonians and the Oxford groups. And a lot of those failed because they were endorsing outside products and outside organizations in order to get money to run the organization. And pretty soon there was such controversy because, oh, I don't like that group. I'm not going to contribute again. This was from the members of the group. And so, you know, what it is to keep it so that we have no outside obligations. We aren't endorsing anybody so that we don't have to have controversy within the group or anything else. Hannah?
Okay, what I would like to say, and I think this goes along with the next tradition too, that we should forever be forever non-professional. I wanted to do things for OA, and when I came, I didn't have any money. And my sponsor said to me, how much did you spend on your binge food? And I always had money for that. So try to put something in the basket, because I spent more than $1. In those days, we put a dollar in there. And today I know, I mean, prices have gone up and we give a little bit more, but there are also some people, as Joe was saying, who want to be very generous. And I'm glad that we have a maximum. If I had a lot of, if I win the lottery and I would like to give, you know, $100,000 to OA, well, I might do that, but then I want to run the show and tell you what to do, or maybe change the steps and traditions, and I can't do that. So it was voted on at also one of the World Service Business Conferences that the maximum I could contribute if I have a lot of money is $5,000 a year to a general fund. I can contribute another $5,000 to a special fund, like, let's say, other languages translations, because, you know, other people have more problems getting money in a poor country. And but then if I leave this planet and I have no plans of doing that for a while, then I can leave something to all of my money to Overeaters Anonymous. And you know why? Because I can't tell you anymore what to do with it. I can't dictate. I gave you $1 million. And now, you know, you should be able to do that and change the steps or change the traditions. And I think that's why that is so important. And we also have the monthly contribution, you know, the ARC contribution, where they take $5 or 10 or whatever you have out of your bank account, if you would like to do that. And, or charge it to a credit card. I think it works both ways. But there too, I could not say take $10,000 out of my bank account every month, you know, when you do this. Not that I have it in there, but those are things that are very important, because we don't want one individual person to run the show. And I like to run the show, because I always try to do that before a program, and I had to learn the hard way. So I think that is very, very important that, you know, we're fully self-supporting, but we're declining outside contributions, but we also have limitations as to how much we can give to a group.
Thank you. We have an organization here called the Oasis Club, which provides a meeting place for Overeaters Anonymous. Used to be the only one in the country. But what the difference is that they have no say over the meetings. Mm-hmm. If you want to start a meeting there, you run the meeting yourself. You pay rent, and, you know, that is the way that we do it. That's the way AA clubs work, and it's not considered a violation of traditions. Now, if they said, you know, you can only have this kind of meeting and we're going to take all your funds and whatever, but the way we run it is, you know, part of the rent, they pay whatever the basket is. I think it's 80% goes towards the rent and the rest goes towards World Service, intergroup, and region. So, you know, you have to make it so that no one has control over the meeting. That is what's important. No one has control over the meeting. Randy.
Can you talk a little bit about how Tradition 7 is applicable in your life outside of Overeaters Anonymous? Because that's a question that I get a lot. And from my own personal experience, Tradition 7 has helped me to be a functioning adult, that I am self-supporting through my own contributions, and which means I have a certain responsibility. Can you touch on that? Or is that outside the scope of the workshop?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Go ahead, Hannah.
No, I don't think so, because this program has taught me that I am responsible for my own actions. And as I said, my sponsor convinced me that I always had money for my binge food. And when I came to program, I was, you know, had very much of a financial insecurity, but I had to learn to plan. And this program has taught me how to plan. And I ended up being a tax accountant, which I thought would never be possible. So, of course, I planned a lot. No matter how much or little we have, as long as we plan it, I think that is what's important, and not be envious, because I always thought, you have a bigger car than I have, so why not me? or, you know, I have a bigger car than that person, so I'm better, and always comparing things. But this program has taught me I have to make plans, because even though our program is one day at a time, but I have to plan that I have enough money so I can buy my abstinent food for tomorrow. And a lot of people have asked me, and I don't give financial advice because, first of all, I'm out of it for so long, I don't really follow all the rules anymore. But I just say, you know, try to remember how much money you spent on your binges and try to use that money and plan your life and try to get ahead that way. So that's how I feel.
You know, I pretty well do the same thing that Hannah just mentioned. And it is about being, you know, one of the things that's been very interesting about my life was till I came in Overeaters Anonymous, God basically gave me everything I asked for and nothing that I needed, which seems strange. I was very successful as a person, money-wise, and I was totally and absolutely empty on the inside. And so when I came into the program, I started to realize that, and I started to look at, you know, I can be self-supporting, but I also need to work my program. And that's why my program is before anything. You know, I was at a meeting yesterday talking, and I said, you know, abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception, which I used to hate when people would say that, because without abstinence, I can't have a higher power. I can't have a job. I can't have, you know, I'll be 350 pounds or whatever. And so it is really important that I, you know, am self-supporting, because it gives me a better sense of myself. I think better about myself. And, you know, when I came into the program, I envied people who had low self-esteem. And so, you know, because I had no self-esteem. And so, you know, I think that by, you know, being self-supporting and doing the other things, I think that it really helps me in my own program. I hope that answers it. Okay. Tradition 8.
Oh, that's my turn. Okay. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. And the spiritual principle is self-discipline. And we talked a little bit about that before. Joe was mentioning it too. And the special workers, I think there's a reason why there's some areas where we need to employ someone. Like, we are volunteers, and, you know, like some of you and Joe and I, we've given a lot because I have the time and Joe took the time or had the time. And so we did that, and we did not get paid. But when I came, I thought, you know, even the secretary probably got paid. I had no idea how these things worked, because I wasn't going to do anything for anybody unless I got paid for it, because, you know, I always needed money. But on the other hand, when, you know, we do everything and it goes all the way up to the trustees, they all volunteer, but we need people who put in 40 hours a week, like the World Service people, or probably more the employees, because they have to be there in order to print the literature, in order to answer questions, in order to organize the meetings and the World Service Convention, which I had signed up for, which fell apart because of COVID. But, and the other people that we need, and Joe was touching on that too, is if an intergroup has an office, and I noticed that some of the offices are closing because of Zoom meetings, I don't know, and, you know, it's okay, it doesn't matter to me, but we do have offices, and so they have to pay the rent. But even the Zoom meetings have to pay something. They have to pay to Zoom in order to have these meetings. So we have to have a certain amount of money, and one person has to accept that responsibility. So maybe in an intergroup office, and I know Ellen in San Diego, I don't know if it's still there, but they had a beautiful office for many years where they had face-to-face meetings. And I think now they probably don't have that many meetings anymore, because it's still difficult to have those face-to-face meetings. And maybe they don't have the money to keep the office open, but as long as they do, they need someone to be there to pay for, you know, pay the rent and do this and organize things, and also be there at a certain time. So if I am required to work from 8 to 4 or 8 to 5, whatever, that is a job. And even though I may be an OA member, it is a job that I may get paid for. But when I do something for a service, and you saw the upside down pyramid, that is a very, very different story. I'm doing it because I've gotten so much from this program, and I'm trying to pay back what I've gotten in this program. Joe?
You said it all. I have nothing else to say unless somebody has a question.
All right, you're next.
Okay, tradition 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And there was a question forwarded by Randy. It says, what does it mean when tradition 9 says we ought never be organized? What about intergroup, region, and WSO? I'm going to read from the 12 steps and 12 traditions a little bit, not very much. Visitors to some freewheeling meetings of Overeat Anonymous sometimes shake their heads and say, tradition 9 is the tradition these people adhere to the closest. The group is never organized. Though our OA meetings may seem chaotic at times, chaos is not the goal of tradition 9. What this tradition encourages us to do is remain free as possible from bureaucracy, which tends to form around organizations, taking on a life of its own and obscuring the real purpose of the group. Everything we do in OA is geared to the primary purpose of carrying the message of recovery based on spiritual principles. Taking care of group business is very important. Still, as little meeting time as possible spent on electing leaders, voting on issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In order to keep our meetings time as free as possible from organizational activities, OA groups create service boards such as intergroups to meet and conduct the business of coordinating local public information activities, group operating service offices, et cetera, publishing newsletters. It goes on to say, but really what it says, I think more than anything else, is that there is no bureaucracy. You know, we have service positions that have a definite period of time, like 1 year or 2 years or 3 years to serve. Also, too, what's very interesting about our World Service Office is that 99% of the people who have served there after a certain period of time are non-OA members. They are not in the program. And I used to think that this was really weird. But what it does is it allows them to be separate from and to run the organization within the traditions based upon advice they get from World Service Business Conference. And so what it is they're serving the organization. And, you know, I can guarantee you that they do not get paid $13 million a year like some CEOs. It's not a really well-paying position. And besides that, it's a position where if you have somebody complaining, they all come to the executive director and he sort of pulls his hair out. But what it is they're there to run the organization in a very efficient manner. And they're not there to recover. They're not there to do anything else. It's an office to take care of the business of Overeaters Anonymous. Intergroups are formed in order to, like it said, hold workshops, to do newsletters, to keep a website up, to get the Zoom working and everything else like that. Region is bringing all of the groups together in order to give information out on a larger scale to a region as a whole, to also handle problems within that region, where if somebody has a real tradition problem, they bring it there first. And then World Service, the trustees and everything else are to really run the business of it from a standpoint of holding what the World Service Business Conference is. And I don't think a lot of people understand this is it is a group conscience. That is what it really is a group conscience. All of the groups are intergroups and groups are allowed to send people there and they vote as a group on what World Service or OA should do as a whole. So it is really a group conscience as a whole.
Okay. And I just want to say that even at the World Service Business Conference, my meeting sends a delegate to World Service and we convince that person that they should vote no on a certain motion that comes up to the floor. But then all these people from all other countries, they talk about it. And for some reason, I think, well, you know, they may be right. So nobody can force me to vote the way my intergroup has told me that they feel. If the majority doesn't go with it, I can voice my opinion and say my intergroup feels that this and this and this should be done. But if everybody else feels, no, it's not a good idea. Majority votes, and it's a group conscience, as Joe said. and the group decides what's best for OA. And I had a request from Randy if we can have a 5-minute break. Is that okay? Thank you. Thank you. All right. We can put the black box on and come back in 5 minutes.
Chris had a question, so let's get her a question.
Oh, okay.
Five minutes. Right. Go ahead, Chris.
You're still muted.
Hi. Actually, the idea of group conscience versus the majority rules is one, and that's all the way up as far as doing the service at World Service and listening to everybody. But I got the impression that I just needed to acquiesce. I wasn't a very strong personality in, like the fervor that I've seen some members have. And so I've like, well, okay, if this is kind of what everybody thinks, then I'll go that direction. And our intergroup gave us the vantage of, if you hear something there, you vote your conscience, because you're given that job to do the best toward OA. That's one question. And then the other question is about the in the pyramid, the line that I'm more involved in is the intergroup. And yeah, and there's all sorts of like other names in there, service bodies and LSBs and all that. So I don't know what language, I mean, are we supposed to be interacting or just in that one box? Thanks.
Okay, I don't know if you want me to go. I mean, do you mean interacting? The first question that you had, it's really true, because there may be a meeting that has mostly people who haven't been around very long, and they think that this is really what we should do. And they sent me as a delegate to World Service, and they talk about things there that are really different, and they are more convincing. Yes, that seems to be the right way to go. And then I have the right to vote with them. But on the other hand, as it was said, some people are very overpowering, and that goes for trustees and everybody else too. So I really have to think it through and see, do I really go along with that person? In other words, I mean, I really have to work and try to get my head to work and work this out to come up with the correct information that I feel is necessary in order for me to be there. And that's why it has an abstinence requirement and a time and program before people are sent to the World Service Business Conference. I'm sorry. And the second tier of the pyramid, if I can say it real quick, yes, the national service boards and then the intergroups, and we have all these different committees, but it is very important because there are other countries, they feel very different about it. It was very easy when Roseanne started our program and we were all in the Los Angeles area and everybody spoke the same language or everybody kind of talked to each other. But now we're going into places like China and we're going into places like Iran or Russia. In Region 2, just recently, they were trying to form a national service board, a language service board, including Russia. And that went on hold because of the crazy politics that have happened now. So things change, but we have to try to pull these people into our folds as a group in Overeaters Anonymous. And we have to assure them that, yes, we're going to do our best so that you have literature in your own language. Because right now, many countries, the only people we can communicate with are the people who speak English, whether it's China or Iran or even Russia. But we want them to get the same thing that we got when Roseanne started our program, help with our compulsion. And that's why we have some of these meeting groups and committees. And these people also come from all different areas, different walks of life. So we have discussions there at meetings. I was on one of the web committees one time and several others, but it's very, very interesting. But we try to make sure that our program grows and that Roseanne's dream really becomes true, that other people can come to our program and feel comfortable working it. Joe? Or break?
Go ahead. Mandy, you had it.
Nancy has her hand up. Nancy, do you mind if we take a 5-minute break and then we address? Okay. Let's take 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then we will reconvene.
I don't know if the lady is here that was asking that last question, but I had a response to it that I think is pretty interesting. When I go to intergroup, and I'm in the largest intergroup that exists, and it is contentious, those board meetings, to say the least. But I found that when I went to region, it was a whole different serious type of thing. I found the people in region too. You know, in our area, it would be San Diego, Sacramento, to be a lot of people who were really grounded and really wanted recovery. And what I learned from them was that I was representing, when you go to the intergroup, I was representing a meeting, correct? I don't go there as a delegate for myself. I go there to represent a meeting. So I always was taught to try to think about what that meeting would want to do. In other words, is it right for OA as a whole for my meeting with this subject is not what's right for me. Because when I come what's right for me, it might not be, it would be what I would never want to hear anybody with under 20 years ever talk, you know, because I have so much time. So what would might be right for my intergroup, for my meeting that I'm the delegate. And that's helped me a lot in doing service to think about the fact. And also, when you go to a delegates meeting world service, you know months and months in advance what's on the agenda. And really the way it's supposed to work is that you take these items to the intergroup and they vote and you're bringing back the group contents. Now, it's possible that at intergroup there's other things and you hear things that influence you to change. But even still, at least you're going there, not representing yourself, but that meeting. So I hope that helps, because that certainly takes the pressure off of you to have to worry about what to do, because it's not really about you, you know?
Thanks, Nancy.
I use it a lot in my own life. That's helped me so much in my own life. Am I making a decision that's good for the people I'm living with or just for me? Right. And that was a big problem. The reality of even in speaking to people, you know, am I correcting you out, you know? I had kids and a lot of relationships, and am I criticizing my partner in front of people? You know, that type of thing. So these things are just so relevant to living my life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate it.
Alisa.
Alisa.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. What were those three things that you said that you read at a meeting, as far as those the meetings, just keeping it very, very streamlined? You mentioned three things.
I read the preamble. I read how it works, which has the 12 steps and everything in it. And then we do the OA promise at the end. I put my hand in yours. Now, at the meeting, I tell you what a good reading is from the big book. It's page 558 of the big book. At the bottom of the page, it starts out God. And it reads to the end of the story. And we read that at the Sunday night meeting every week. Speaker meeting.
Well, I really like the idea of streamline, because I know that some formats for meetings can become they become laden with format, and just and then you know, it's like, oh, we've got, you know, 5 minutes left for a meeting, just as you were saying.
Exactly. So, the other thing is I do the Serenity Prayer at the beginning, of course.
Okay. All right.
Okay, we're on tradition 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's my turn. Overeaters Tradition 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And it's perseverance, the spiritual principle. And, you know, as we touched on before, Joe did and I did, that people try to bring things into the program. But it's so good. And, you know, this is really important, and it's helped me so much. And it's just like bringing in other people. Like, I have this wonderful therapist, Dr. Joe Jones or something, And those are the things that we have to watch for, because everything is an outside issue. There might be wonderful people out there, you know, psychiatrists, psychologists, I don't know, I haven't never had one, but they're not that important for some people. But I don't need to bring it in. I should not bring it in into the meeting, because another person may have a very different experience. I use an example. I had a very bad dentist once. And so, I mean, I would never go back there again. But if they were in program, you know, and I would have a wonderful dentist, I would say, okay, Joe, you have a problem. You go to that dentist, and he may have a terrible experience. And those are the things that I have to keep separate. I can tell people that I read something wonderful and it's really helped me, or I've been to a person who has really helped me, like a nutritionist or whatever it is. But I cannot give you the name. Now, if you call me on a one-to-one on the telephone and say, I'm very interested in what you said and what that person does, do you mind giving me that person's name? On a one-to-one, I would. And I would always say, I always put a disclaimer on everything, but it has nothing to do with Overeaters Anonymous. That's strictly my opinion and how I experienced it, because you may not have the same results, and it goes for everything. And we were talking about the traditions being also for out there. And I think sometimes I need to work them out there more than in here, because a lot of people are trying to understand them, getting along with family members. And, you know, I've been very fortunate. I really only have one relative left, my sister. She lives 6,000 miles from here. And there was always kind of, we could never really talk very open and honest. And then lo and behold, she came to program, and the relationship has changed completely. We can talk. This is my opinion. And she can say, no, I don't feel that way. But it's very difficult at times to do that with people who don't know anything about program. So I have to tread very carefully. And I never recommend anyone. I can just say, and I've done that over and over again, that, you know, I'm in OA and I know this wonderful person. So maybe, you know, you want to do that, or maybe we want to bring him in. And that's how I feel about Tradition 10. And let's see if there was a question. Okay, yes, there is. How do you achieve unity when people have different opinions? And what's the difference between unity and majority rules? Well, I think, you know, the way we achieve unity is that, as we were saying before, if we have a group conscience meeting and I tell you how I feel and Nancy tells me how she feels and Joe says something different, and then maybe if most people, we talk and talk, and eventually I may think, yeah, you know, Joe has a point there. So maybe what I was thinking is not quite right. And he may convince me. I may maybe convince, I convince myself. He doesn't convince me, but I believe what he said. And so maybe some people will change their mind. And so the majority rule, that would be more like trying to dictate something, even though if we all agree with something, it's the majority, but we still don't rule. We want to have the unity that I believe that whatever we are going to do is the right thing. And as we talked about before, if we can't come to a decision, let's go to someone else, like region, your intergroup, whatever. There's help available. What we don't want to do is, I don't want to start a fight with Joe because I feel this way and I will not change my mind. And I used to be very good at that before program. So that's how I feel about this. And I hope it answers the question. Joe?
I think the most important thing is, again, it all boils down to having a safe place for the newcomer and the existing members to come, where they don't, they feel like that, you know, they will be able to find recovery. And so I think it's just real important that we do not have controversy at a group at outside the organization. We do anything within the groups to have controversy outside. And I think we have a question from Randy.
Yep. I guess my question is, what constitutes an outside enterprise? As a specific example, this there was a meeting and a person was talking about how they were affected, about how they were affected by climate change. And this person went on and on and on about climate change and the politics of it and so on and so forth. So on the one hand, yes, climate change is an outside enterprise. It is not the program. However, climate change's effect on this person and their relationship with food was very relevant. So in that case, you're kind of caught in the middle. Is this an outside enterprise or not? And I was wondering for some guidance.
I have an experience with that. We were sitting, that was still face-to-face before the pandemic, and I was sitting next to a lady, and she got all excited because you were talking about climate change, how important it is, and you know that we really need to do. And I stopped her because it was before the meeting, and she was talking to other people, and while we were already sitting, and I just whispered to her, and I said, you know, that's an outside issue. I think that you have, might have some wonderful ideas, but we don't bring things like that into the meeting because we have conflicting interests. You may believe it's a, you know, it's very real and it needs to be worked on. And maybe Nancy thinks that, well, we're doing just fine. Why do we make such a big deal out of it? And we can end up in a big fight. And she was very open-minded. She's still, you know, in program. And I said, you know, we can talk about it after if you really like to do and talk about it and you can tell me more about it. I said, I'm interested, but we cannot discuss it in the meeting. And I never tell anybody you can't talk about it, but I always try to tell them to let's talk about it afterwards. And then whether I have the same opinion or not, it doesn't matter, but it does not affect the whole group. I have to try to get outside issues, not let them influence the group, but keep them outside. And it's difficult at times, you know, because sometimes people speak up like that if they share about other things too, whether it's books, religion, climate change, you name it. I mean, people are so excited about what they believe in that they feel they need to save the world. No, I don't need to save the world. I need just need to help compulsive overeaters to deal with the disease of compulsive overeating. Joe?
That is sometimes a very difficult question. And, yeah. And it's extremely difficult. For instance, if a person in a meeting said, I was able to find my God through Jesus Christ, is that a violation of traditions?
I would say yes. I'm sorry.
I would say no.
Okay.
Because if she said, I found my God through Jesus Christ, and I believe that you should find your God through Jesus Christ, it would be a violation of traditions. But I think what she was saying was that she was saying how she found her recovery, and she was not telling anyone else how to do it. Now, I may be wrong on that, but that is what I feel. And I feel that now, if she went on for 30 minutes about it, that might be a different story. But, you know, it's a very difficult question. And what this says is OA name never ought to be drawn into public controversy. I think where what I get out of this tradition is what happens. Now, the other stuff is part of the other traditions. But if an OA group puts out a PR release that they are going to have a program on diet and food plans at the church. And, you know, they invite somebody that's very controversial. It all comes down to, for me, you know, it's just real strange. I'm not sure I can answer this fully without thinking more about it. But it has been brought up many times. But I think that what happens is if it's brought before the outside public, it's much more damaging to OA than what happens within a meeting, because at least in a meeting, you can bring somebody aside and talk to them. Where in outside issues, it becomes more critical. Yeah, Nancy.
Well, I was just going to react to that because again, this is about OA as a whole, and there's lots of people from lots of places sitting in these meetings. But when I was new, and I only have my experience, I was raised, and a lot of people in my area were raised in a Jewish home. And when I went to those, it was hard enough for me to go to the meetings because most of them had big crosses And when somebody would get up and talk about Jesus being their higher power, I'd see my grandmother looking at me, you know, from the grave, you know, and I would get terrified and just want to run out. It was like, and I wouldn't hear another word they said. But then I heard people say things like, through a religious experience, and if I wanted to find out, I could go talk to them afterwards. Or they'd say it was kind of a deity or a word I didn't even know, but it wasn't something so specific that can completely disturb. And I mean, there are children now in this world from different religious families from different countries in Los Angeles, who if you mention as a teacher Halloween, those kids run out of the room because it's got to do with their religion. So they have to be very careful. So I really try now to think a lot more about everybody in the room because of the experience that I had, you know. I can't even explain to you if you've had that experience, what's that like?
Well, I'd like to say something. When I came, as I said, I don't know if my family, I don't think they were atheists, but definitely agnostics. And if anybody said anything about, and my background is so confusing, I wouldn't know what religion I belong to. But anyway, I didn't have one. And when anybody said something, and it didn't matter if it pertained to any religion, today it doesn't bother me anymore, but my hair would be standing up. How dare they say that? I'm here to find a way to deal with my food obsession. I don't want to hear about, you know, whether your rabbi gave a wonderful talk or the minister gave a wonderful talk, and I got so much out of that. And, you know, we have to think about the new person. They may come in as an atheist. I didn't believe, I didn't like the word God, and a higher power had to be explained to me. And I'm doing things today and living my life in a way that I would not have believed possible. Pray and meditate. I will never do that. And now I do that. And I don't have a particular God that I pray to, but I know there's something bigger than myself. And I always try to stress that with sponsors. It doesn't matter what religion. And, you know, I had a sponsor who was really good because it took 3 years before I figured out that she was Catholic because she invited me to her daughter's wedding. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known. And that was okay. But you see, that's what I get in program, because those things would have turned me off. And maybe it's just me, but I came from a family without any religion. And today I appreciate everybody's religion. I mean, when I travel, I love to go to all these different places because it's fantastic. I love history and I loved religions, but all of them, I like to learn about them, but they have no business in the program. And if somebody would said that, I would probably take that person aside and pay him a compliment and say, I think it's so wonderful that you found that. But, you know, it's really not, somebody else may not feel the same way. And, you know, being nice about things, which is something I didn't know how to do when I came. But that's just my opinion, and I may be wrong. And Joe and I are not going to end up in a fight because he feels one way and I feel another, right?
You know, and what this does is this brings up something that's very important to remember about the traditions. Everybody doesn't interpret the traditions the same. And that's where the group conscience comes in. And you try to come to a conscientious agreement about it. So that's what's real important. Tradition 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. I think this is really one of the most important things of the traditions. And Roseanne, in the video I have of her, talks about that she only broke anonymity once and showed her face at the level of press, radio, and TV. And she showed it when she went on the Paul Coates show the first time, because she wanted to show that members of Overeaters Anonymous were thin. She talks about this. But I think the real reason why it's real important that I do not mention the programs I'm in, or at least identify by name and face on TV or radio, and I have been on radio, I've never been on TV, is that a good example was that there have been several people, one person I'm thinking about in particular, who went on the level of press and radio and talked about being an Overeaters Anonymous and how he had lost so much weight and everything like that. And then about 5 years later or 6 years later, he was in a movie and he weighed about 350 pounds. And so what I've always was told, and this is true in AA when people said I'm in AA on TV and then they later get drunk, is if somebody sees that he was in OA, he lost the weight and then he gained it all back, then what happens is they say, oh, OA didn't work. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. So it probably wouldn't work for me. And that's why it's real important that I keep my anonymity, not show my face, not give my name, not talk about what I do for a living where I can be identified, is because, again, it allows people to realize that there is a solution in these rooms. And it says in How It Works, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And so, you know, what it is that, you know, we're always giving hope to people when they come into the rooms that there is a solution. And if they follow all the steps and traditions, that there is a way to recovery. Anna?
No, I agree with what you said. I don't really have anything to add. Okay. And keep coming back is the most important part, because when I came, I went to one meeting, my first meeting, with all, and I identified with all the differences, not the similarities. And all I talked to about when I talk to a new person is, haven't you heard in other programs, they say go to 90 meetings in 90 days, or at least go to 6 different meetings, because I was always quick making up my mind about anything. And what I try to convey to new people, you know, try, give it a chance. Next time, if you go to a speaker, like the speaker meetings Joe was talking about, next week, somebody else will speak that might be something you can identify with. Don't give up before the miracle happens. And I'm grateful I didn't. So that's all I have to say.
There was a question. I have trouble with tradition 11. See my tradition 5 comments. Am I allowed to tell others how I lost the weight when they ask me? You are, one-on-one especially. What are health fairs? What about health fairs? Health fairs, they usually have a table and they have literature and they have people there and they may have a name, which is just one name, like their first name, but they're not on TV. They're not at press and radio. They're not identifying themselves as other than members of Overeaters Anonymous. And this is the way they recovered. How do we maintain anonymity when we are openly representing OA? There's several ways. One is, and we'll talk about anonymity in a minute, which is probably one of the most misunderstood of all things, is that when I was on radio talking about OA, I actually used a different name. I used Charles, which is my middle name. And so I didn't have my last name or whatever. And so I didn't identify myself other than the fact is by my first name, they couldn't see my face. And I just talked about how OA helped me to lose weight. It funny things happen every once in a while. I sent out a press release for a OA convention. And I said, please do not use my full name and everything. And they published my full name in it at the end, said, and whatever. So, you know, and I said, oh, screw it. I don't care. But anyway, it's important that we do not show our faces or we do not identify by last name in the level of press, radio, and TV and other means of things. Now, Nancy?
What?
She needs to unmute.
You can unmute?
Really?
May I just say something? I was involved in several representing OA at health events at all in Palm Springs at the Eisenhower Medical Center. And the only thing we had a tag and mine had said my name. I didn't choose a different name. I just said Hannah. But when people came up, we displayed literature. When they wanted to talk about it, I could only tell them how OA worked for me and what happened to me. And I could tell them what our organization structure is like. But I could not, I always put in a disclaimer saying that this is my opinion, this is what worked for me, and it works for everybody if they work the program, but there's no guarantee. I also have seen people go out because they didn't feel that the program was right for them. So, you know, giving a name, and also I think it was Joe and I, we were talking about it, how anonymous am I in program? Now, I don't really care that much, but I don't give out my last name. I don't put it, you know, next to my first name up here. But on the other hand, if somebody would like to know, they want to send me something, or I want to send a birthday card to someone, I can ask them. And if they're willing to give me their last name, fine. What if I end up in the hospital and somebody says, I want to visit you? That's mm-hmm. perfectly all right, because there are probably a lot of Joes in there, but not very many Hannahs. So they might find me if it's a small hospital. But on a personal basis, I'm not anonymous, but I just want other people to feel safe by doing that, that they don't have to give their last name either. And that's my opinion. Okay. Nancy, did you unmute?
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I spent my entire 46 years being in public information on world service and read. That's my thing. And so I've been on television a lot for over years, anonymous, especially in LA. And it's very much like, Ellen, listen up, like Zoom right now. Interesting things can happen. When we're on Zoom right now, there really is no anonymity, because anybody can come to a lot of meetings. So it's so important to remember something. I don't know what happened to it, and I wonder if you guys might address it. Every format I ever read that Roseanne wrote that was in the beginning said, we share in a general way. Like, I don't say what I eat every day, because I'm a 100-pounder. And if a bulimic heard it and tried to do that, they could die. Or I'm a 100-pounder. And what if I was pregnant? What about now that I have a liver condition and I don't eat salt? That just applies to me. So I just say I have a food plan, you know, and this general way is, but on a Zoom meeting, I believe that when I share personal information and not in a general way, you know, my past boss anybody could be listening. My doctor, PI, is giving out these numbers in Zoom rooms to all the doctors and medical people. So it's so important to remember that this is not where you're at a meeting and you see who's there. And so many people have cameras off. Also, I think that I used to always, when I went on television, and I was very new the first time, right, we didn't say our names, we said we'd climb the steps, and we did all, because there are books, by the way, for those of you that know them, and I was a part of that. We have pamphlets on exactly what to do. At health fairs, the instructions are you're talking about Overeaters Anonymous and you're not telling your story. At all the booths at the Orange County Fair and at the LA City Nurses Fair, we never sit there and talk about ourselves. We just talk about OA and we help them to get to a local meeting, which makes the big difference. But we go into high schools with panels all the time and talk to nurses and nutritionists and medical panels and it's life-saving, you know. But again, we rarely were talking about the structure, as Hannah said. But I think the most important thing is that when I went on television, and I'll share this, and it's a really hard thing to share. You know, I was fairly new the first time, but played locally in Los Angeles. And my father, we've lived here my whole life, and a lot of people knew who I was. They knew my voice. They knew what I looked like, you know, and even though I was blacked out, it became very obvious to my children's friends, and they listened, to my parents listened. And I was so excited and enamored and on this honeymoon. I talked about going to jail and I might not have to do that anymore because I was so lonely. And I talked about having an illegitimate kid. That illegitimate kid was listening to this. But she didn't really know that, you know, and you just couldn't stop me. And I think that I suffered greatly and she has suffered greatly because of that. So I think it's really important to think of these things. And that's what the traditions have done for me. They have really taught me to pause and to make that big book come alive.
Thank you, Nancy. We have a Joy.
Yes, hi. I have a question about something that I did, and I'm wondering if it broke the tradition. It was a wonderful experience. I did it 2 years in a row, where there was a psychiatrist who was teaching at the University of Arizona Medical Center. And he asked, I think there were three of us who we were supposed to tell our story to all these med students. And I think they were sophomores. It was fabulous. We told a bit of our story and then they asked us questions. It was open for question and answer. And I got so much out of it. And I think they did too. I mean, the doctor contacted us again and said, please come back. You know, my students last year really enjoyed this. And then COVID came along and we didn't do it anymore. But I'm wondering, I mean, he asked us to tell our stories. Was that not what we were supposed to do there? I mean, we did talk about OA, but we, all three of us, told our stories.
I think what the important thing is when you do something like that is you do not represent OA as a whole. That's one of the important things. And you can tell your story about how you came in. Normally what I would do in that situation is to mention that I worked the steps, but I probably wouldn't mention OA as the organization. That's just me. And you're going to get quite a few different opinions on this. Now, also it comes into when Hannah talks about tradition 12 is anonymity, is I have a right to break my anonymity to anyone. It's just that you don't have a right to break my anonymity to anyone. And I think that that's real important. I normally have my last name on the deal here. It's something I believe in that you, within the group, you can have your last name. I have stopped doing it because of Zoom bombers. I didn't want to get phone calls, or whatever. But I think it was, for me, it was perfectly okay what you did, as long as you didn't say that you were representing OA as a whole.
But that's exactly what we did. We were asked to come because of Overeaters Anonymous. And the psychiatrist wanted to explain to his students that, hey, there is an answer. And there can be recovery. Now, I don't know if maybe he was a 12-stepper, not sure. But that's the reason we were asked to attend, because of Overeaters Anonymous.
Yes, well, we were asked to at times to go to schools and talk to children. And we would talk about our own personal story. And especially if we would find a young person, you know, it's very difficult to get kids to Overeaters Anonymous. We tried, it didn't work too well. But, you know, having someone and telling them our experience. But also, I disagree a little bit with Joe, because we would tell them there is a program that helps people who have a problem with food. And that program is called Overeaters Anonymous. I don't really speak for them. I'm not a representative. I tell my own story, but there is a program, and that program has helped me. And there is a fine line. It's very difficult. You know, we want to get the message out there, but on the other hand, we don't want to tell people, because I am an Overeaters Anonymous, and I have maintained my weight loss for so many years that if you go there, it works, because that's how I worked all the diets. I knew it would be perfect, but it wasn't, because I always gained my weight back. So I have to always put that disclaimer in. But I feel a little different about it, because when we go into hospitals or also to schools and talk about it, because a lot of people, especially kids nowadays, they have weight problems, to tell them that, you know, I could not stop if I had one piece of chocolate and I would eat the whole box and how I felt, but I found a program that helps me. Not, you know, there is a fine line, and I don't know exactly, you know, where it is, because we have to judge. But I want people to find the program if they're really looking for something, but put a disclaimer in saying, you know, it does not work for everybody, but it's worked for a whole lot of people. And that's usually what I try to say. Joe?
You covered it. It's one of those fine lines, you know, and wherever. And, again, we have probably two different opinions on this. And so, you know, but I think that one of the important things is that you say that you worked it and everything else, but you're not speaking for OA as a whole.
That is a disclaimer. Yeah. You know, I know how I can explain how it's structured, how it works. I can explain that I found help there, but I'm not speaking my life story. Is not represented by OA. This is how it helped me. So I'm trying to keep the distance there, or the fine line. And it's very difficult, because I want to get the message out there and get everybody to come to OA who has a problem. But if I don't tell them where to go, how do they find it? So I think Joe and I are in for a fist fight. We'll do it later on today. Okay, any more, or shall we go on to 12? Everybody ready for 12? Okay, anonymity, and Joe mentioned that, is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. And the spiritual principle is service. And we were just talking about that, you know, going to a meeting where people want to hear about Overeaters Anonymous. And I was very anonymous when I came because I would not tell anybody. I remember when the first meeting that I went to, and it was in a big town. In those days, nobody walked. Everybody was driving. It was dark, but I looked right and left to be sure that nobody would know that I was an Overeaters Anonymous. And even though the program, the name is Overeaters Anonymous, I want the program to be out there. I want people to learn about it. And today, anybody who wants to listen to it, I tell them, but I always put a disclaimer in, as we said before, this is how it worked for me, but it doesn't work that way for everybody. But if you keep coming, you may get a lot of help in the program. And we had some questions here. Okay, this one says, I've got way too much personality. So am I to stifle it, keep quiet, change? Well, you know what they used to say, and maybe a little bit more in the other program, but since I learned a little bit there going with my husband, they always used to say, take the cotton out of your mouth, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth so that you learn to listen and not to talk. And in my case, I wasn't going to talk. I didn't talk for a long time because I was so perfect and I only wanted to say the perfect thing. So I didn't say anything. And today, as you know, I mean, sometimes I stutter a little bit. Sometimes I mix up words or something. I'm not perfect. And, you know, life is so much easier. So I don't have any advice for this person, but maybe can think about it. Maybe just, you know, calm down a little bit. Maybe talk a little less. We come from opposite ends. I have a sponsee who, you know, talked from day one. And maybe she had to slow down a bit. And I didn't say anything. So I had to perk up a little bit and talk a little bit more. And eventually it evens out. But telling people that all we come from all different sides, but we can come to a level where we feel comfortable and feel good about ourselves. And this person also said, how do I achieve unity when people have different opinions? And we talked about that too, you know, unity, group conscience, talking about it, trying to discuss my way of thinking. And then one of you, you know, says, this is how I feel about it, like Randy says. And then we come to the conclusion that, well, we can't agree, so let's leave it for a while. And that's the way I work my own life, because I always made instant decisions. And many times I stepped on it. I either stepped on your feelings or I did the wrong thing and I made the wrong decisions. And today, whenever something comes up, I usually think about it. And if it feels right, then I think, well, maybe that's the right thing to do. But if I have my little doubts, I feel maybe I should turn it over to my higher power and wait just a little bit. Intuition, that's how I get my information from my higher power. And I'm able to listen to other people. I'm not so stubborn anymore as I used to be. By the way, I'm German. They're stubborn, right? I have two strikes against me. I'm German and I was a tax accountant and everything had to be just so, right? And today, no. I mean, I'm not always right. And even when new people talk about something, I tell them, I'm doing the best I can. It's worked for me this way, but I'm still trying to learn. Okay, and let's see if we have any others here. Okay, Zoom bombing has added a lot of complexity to the program. How do you reconcile keeping the meeting safe with denying access to people? And we've gone through that before. We've talked about it. Somebody said Joe does it a different way and he can tell you how he does it. Or maybe just trying to communicate with a person. We had a person earlier that just had a long number. And, you know, Randy was trying to communicate and all of a sudden that person disappeared. So we don't know if it was someone who was trying to do us harm or, you know, disrupt the meeting, or if it was just someone who couldn't figure out how to get in. So it's a fine line too. So we have to try to keep the meeting safe to the best of our ability, which may not always be possible, but we're trying to do the best we can. And then this says another one question here, and it's kind of a combination. How to address mentioning non-program literature that may be helpful? And what's an outside issue? Exercise, sexual orientation, or gender identity, politics, or religion? Well, all that is really an outside issue. And we have sponsors. We can talk to sponsors about it. This is how I feel about a certain thing. Just don't always, you know, say everything in an open meeting. And I was, as I said, I would never do anything. And I would not try to bring anything in. The worst thing that I did was once I wanted to buy this cookbook because somebody in program wrote it. And I was told that's an outside issue. But that's when it takes people who've been around for a while. And I was also at one time told, you know, somebody went up and talked about the daughter having some medical procedure and that Medicare paid for it. And I thought, oh, my God, oh, my God. And that is something you're not supposed to bring up. That's against the traditions. I don't have anything. You know, people get help in all areas, whether they have the surgery or not, and it's perfectly all right. But I cannot advertise that it's really good for you and Medicare pays for it. That's definitely a break of the traditions. And so I'm trying to do my best, and I know you all are doing the best you can too. So I just feel that if I have a question, I should talk it over with somebody else and not just bring it out in the meeting and, you know, throw it at you and maybe upset you because of the way I'm talking about it. Exercise, sexual orientation, or gender identity, politics, religion, those are really all outside issues. I mean, I can say, you know, this program has helped me to get a little bit more active and I'm exercising a little bit more. Now I'm sentenced to exercise to get my hip better, but that's a different story. And like gender identity, I have so many friends in program. I had a friend in program and he was, you know, he was gay and I didn't know that for 20 years. And I loved him then. I love him now, but we don't talk about that. If somebody mentions it, fine. It's just a mention and nothing else, but we don't bring it into the program and talk about it constantly. It's an outside issue. And religion too. I mean, as I said, you know, people mean well. They want to think that maybe their spiritual advisor would have a good story. It's something that might help us in program. It's an outside issue and it's up to me to tell them. And if I'm interested, I can always say, where does that person speak? And I can go there afterwards by myself at talking to a person. And I don't know if it makes it clear, but that's the way how I feel about keeping things outside. And if in doubt, talk to a sponsor. If in doubt, leave it out and talk to someone after the meeting. Okay, Joe, would you like to say some more?
Well, I think especially on that last one, outside issue, exercise, sexual orientation, gender identity, politics, whatever. I think that I don't know how to put this. A lot of my eating was over being gay. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned in my story about my struggles with being gay and how I overcame them. And I don't say that everybody should accept it. I don't say everybody should be happy with it. But what it is, it's real important that I talk about, even I think in meetings, about the struggles that I had. And I think that is a little bit different than, and also I believe that exercise, if I found that exercise helped me, you know, that they've over and over again tried to make that one of the tools of the program. But I think there is, again, a fine line there. And I think that what's important is that we, you know, how should I put this? Is that I have a friend in AA who used to say, just don't drink and everything will be okay.
Isn't it important to put a disclaimer on everything? That's what I try to do. This is what works for me and this is how I am. It may not work for you. And I forget sometimes because I'm human too, but you know, it is important. And when people talk and they say something like, you know, I mean, I am gay on this, I listen and then I kind of forget about it. Because as I said, I mean, I'm sure my friend has said it many times when I heard him talk, but I didn't even think about it.
And I agree with you, Hannah, there. But I think also, too, is that what happens is you have to be real careful because, you know, there's a lot of difference between, you know, I'm saying I'm gay and I had to struggle to overcome this and everything, and saying that I'm a Democrat, independent, or Republican, and, you know, I had to, and this is what I believe, and et cetera, et cetera. So it is, again, it's all back to a very fine line, and nothing is solid black and nothing is solid white. And there is some gray areas. Nancy?
Well, first of all, I wanted to before we're on step 12, so before we get to an ending, that from the bottom of my heart, and my disclaimer is this is just for me, this has been a beautiful experience, you know, and it's not just that I know the two of you, but I trust the two of you and I know of your integrities. And so I believe everything you're saying you really is from your heart. And I believe that OA has a horrible drop-off rate. We have a massive amount of relapse. We have every other workshop is on relapse. I'd never even heard about it my first 10 years because nobody did it. And so I think the fact that, and like Joe, when you're talking, it just reminds me that you're on a side of having recovery and lots of it. So what you're sharing now is from decades of experience. When you go back and tell your story, it's a little different than I think a lot of this breaks of anonymity is coming when somebody with 6 months who's in the middle of having a sex operation talks the entire 20-minute share about how horrible it is. And they never even mention anything to do with recovery, never mention a sponsor or a food plan, or we even have steps. That's, I think, what a lot of it's a big difference, you know. But I just kind of wanted to say, and I wondered if Hannah and you may touch on this for a quick second. A lot of the cure for me for a lot of things was in service. So if you talk a little about what you learned through service to help you with the traditions, and also the fact that there's help. Like somebody raised a question just now about having trouble with Zoom bombers. Well, Ellen happens to be here. And I know meetings, I have seen her run a region convention with hundreds of people going smoothly. I've seen her run 3 meetings at a time, not one problem, not one, because she knows what she's doing and she's offering the help. Yet at one of our main meetings the other night, the guy refused to call her. He wants to do it his way. So of course they got Zoom bombed. They don't want to do a chat room. They just don't want to do the things that are suggested. And there's nothing we can much do about that. Because this is the degree of recovery. I think we have to remember now, a lot of people that come here are just not able to get well. And they're probably not going to be here for that long. And that's a big part of the problem. So I wonder if you might touch on the fact that there's just help for everything here, if you're able to reach out.
Yes, thank you, Nancy. There is. And you know, you don't stay in program for 40 years, as some of us have, without any major tragedies. But the thing is, as long as I keep coming back, as long as I work the steps and traditions and talk to sponsor and share my feelings, I don't have to go out and eat over it. I mean, I've had things happen to me. I actually had malnutrition at one time when I was a kid. I was born in the wrong country and, you know, when the war ended. But from the moment I had food, I mean, I was getting pretty big again. And those are things that I had to overcome, that I was a compulsive overeater from day one, even though I wasn't always overweight, and accepting the things and how life changes. Because when I came, I was in my 30s, now I'm in my 80s, and little things happen. So you may have to change your abstinence. You may have to change certain things that you do. And I'm willing to accept that today. And, you know, doing the things, I turn my will and life every day over to my higher power. And today I have no problem with the word God. And when I came, I swore I would never do that. And it makes life so much easier. I always say, usually when I finish talking, that in the morning, you know, I say good morning to my higher power and my husband, who's up there with him now. And I just ask for the willingness to help me to have good, clean, and I added healthy abstinence today. And to help me accept what comes my way, including some of the pains that I had to go through and still am going through. And most of all, to treat others the way I would like to be treated. And I have to confirm that every day. And it's become almost like a religion. And, you know, we talk about it, nothing, you know, it doesn't fit the program. But I do that religiously every morning, because if I don't, I don't start my day right. I can't jump out of bed. Well, right now I can't jump out of bed. I crawl out of bed. But I used to jump out of bed and get going and then forget about certain things. I have to touch bases with my higher power in order to have a good day. And that helps me accept what comes my way. Computer crashes, health issues, that's life. And accepting life on life's terms, I was never able to do that. And everybody in this program has helped me to do that, including the steps, first of all, and the traditions to work them in program. And also just as important to work them out there in the real world, because they don't understand when I say, you know, you have to be kind. And when I talk to people nowadays, you have to wait a half hour on the phone before somebody answers. And I used to get so mad. I mean, you know, before program or before the pandemic, and I would tap a counter because they weren't fast enough for me. And you know what? That just makes the people mad. And today I may be a little upset if I have to wait so long. So the first thing I do is I say, you know what? I've waited a long time and I'm really not too happy about it, but please don't take it personally because you're a real nice person. Right away, they're on your side. You see, it's my behavior that controls what goes on out there and what I get back. And I never knew that. I was always taking and not giving. And this program has taught me to give. And if it just means kindness, that's good enough for me. Joe?
Thank you. Yeah, you said most of it. You know, one of the things is I'm trying to be the best person I can be every day. And so, you know, and I've often wondered why there aren't more people in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And I personally, this is just my opinion, believe that compulsive overeating is the first major addiction of everybody. Because as a child, even as a baby, when I was crying and throwing a fit and having a bad day, they would put some food in my mouth because food was the way that I was comforted. And it's been very hard, I think, to break away from that, that food is a comfort. Now, this is off the traditions, but that food is a comfort. And what it was it was the first comfort. It was the way that my parents said, you don't have to feel. And so, you know, I think that one of the things that we have to overcome is we have to show that people that it's okay to feel and that it's okay not to overeat over it. And, you know, if we had everybody that came into these rooms stay over the last, my 39 years and Nancy and Anna's 46 years and Randy's, you know, we wouldn't have a stadium big enough to keep all the people at every meeting. So it's real important that we're kind and loving and we're understanding. And one of the things that I kind of talk about, and this is, again, off the traditions, is when sometimes I used to see when people walked into the rooms and they had been out for 10 years and they gained 100 pounds, people avoided them. It was like they were afraid that they were going to catch what they had. And, you know, they already had it. It's called compulsive overeating. And, you know, what I learned how to do was just walk up to them, hug them and say, God, it's great to see you. How can I help you? And I think that that's what the program is about. Chris?
I guess I don't know if it's tradition based, but I guess I'm more aware because I am working on this newcomer meeting is to be open, to be maybe not overkill, because I also was a person sitting in the back row and I don't want you to see me, come near me, touch me, I'm coming late, I'm leaving early. That person versus the one that just says, God, I need you guys so much. And in between that is how to be okay with what you just described, which is the fluidity of the people that are in our rooms. I honestly, I've been trying, I'm not very good at it, but trying to put all the newcomers in my phone, and holy shees, I would text them and it's like, I'm not doing it anymore. Well, it wasn't even, you know, 6 weeks. And I think I own that in some way. I don't mean to. I know it's not about me, but I judge, was I overkill or was I not enough? Or, you know, did my little spiel about keep coming back not fly with them? I don't know. And I know it's not me, but it feels like that I'm, and Joe, no offense, but they were, this was back in, God, where, when was I there? A while ago in World Service, is we're a group of over 50 elderly white females, you know, and that kind of is true. And talking to a newcomer that's younger or male, or, you know, things that aren't, that don't match my experience, I feel kind of at a loss.
Well, I think several things. One is, this program is for those who want it, not those who need it. And that's something we have to remember. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, the only thing I can share is, and I think that whether you're Black, white, gay, straight, Hispanic, whatever, if I say, I eat because I don't want to feel the terrible feelings that I'm feeling, that knows no boundaries. And I think that that is where it's real important that we share about those things. In other words, I don't want to feel the feelings. That is basically why, you know, and also to getting into psychobabble, all addictions are shame-based. And, you know, shame is, guilt is I made a mistake, shame is I am a mistake. And it's really about me letting people know that they're not a mistake. That's what I think is real, real important. I'm not a mistake. I thought I was a mistake when I came into this program, and I'm not a mistake. None of the people I see on here are mistakes. But, you know, I hated myself when I came in. I don't hate myself today. And that's what we need. You know, I was at a meeting the other day, and I shared simply that, you know, I love myself today. And when I look in the mirror, I know that if I love myself, I don't need a drug. And if I don't love myself, there's no drug strong enough. And I think that's the message that we need to get across. And to, I heard in my first meeting, you know, things that would change me. One is, there is a solution. And two is, you know, you only as sick as your secrets. And three is, you 301, three meals a day, nothing in between. So that's what we need to push. I am going to have to leave because I lead a meeting at 7 o'clock. But I want to thank you, unless you have some other questions for me. And you're free to talk to about me after I leave.
And, okay.
And if I said something that offended anyone, I'm always happy to be on a fourth step. So anyway, and also too, if this group would like for me to play their full Roseanne tape sometime, please contact me. It is a 40-minute video of Roseanne telling the story of her struggles with food and the founding of Overeaters Anonymous. It is a real inspiration. It cannot be recorded, or I cannot give it out because of copyright issues, but I'm happy to show it. And I think a few people on here said, I know Hannah and Nancy have seen it. It's a really great, great video. So I want to thank you all for asking me, and I appreciate it. And we have a great speaker tonight with many, many, many years of recovery on the 7 o'clock meeting. And I put it up on the meeting, and 7 o'clock Houston time. Please come and join us some Saturday. And we'd love to have you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. And I would like to thank everybody, too, for asking us. I mean, it was quite a surprise. And I think it was wonderful to meet you all and talk about it, because it's so important. This program has given me the capability to live. And I was always, I felt so insecure. I think I felt insecure long before I even knew I had a problem with food. And now I know that the problem with the food is I have a plan. I don't have to do that anymore. And I don't feel insecure, because I found out there's no such thing as perfectionism. And I think most of us try to be perfect. So thank you all for having us. Thank you, Joe. We're going to find it out later.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you all. Let's do a minute of silence and then the third step prayer.
Okay.
God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. And keep coming back. And thank you.
Thank you, Randy, for asking us. It was meant to be.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. It's always an honor. Thank you.